One of the major themes in Parshas Emor is the Kedusha, the holiness of the Kohanim's family. It speaks about who the Kohen can come in contact with in terms of those who have died, the special laws of the Kohen Gadol. And within this section we find the following pasuk in Perek Kaf Aleph. If the daughter of a Kohen will be desecrated through adultery, she desecrates her father, she shall be consumed by the fire, and then the next pasuk talks about the laws of the Kohen Gadol. The Hebrew Ba'ish Kohen ki techel is note et avia hi mechalele ba'ish tisaref. I'd like to take a look at this pasuk, which at first glance seems to be very distant, perhaps even irrelevant from our lives. How many of us are the daughters of a Kohen? We're not talking about married to a Kohen, we're talking about the daughters of a Kohen. We don't have the punishment of the Mita Beitin of the High Court now, which is consumed by fire, which is drinking molten hot lead. We don't have that today. So it would seem that, you know, the whole law is really irrelevant to our lives. And the beauty of learning is that we understand that every single pasuk, every single word is nitzchius, is eternal. And that something that doesn't seem to be at face value connected to my life is teaching us worlds and worlds of messages specifically for my life, whether you're the daughter of a Kohen or not. What I'd like to do is a little bit differently than we normally do. I'd like to take a look at each phrase in the pasuk, four phrases altogether. Uvadish Kohen ki techel lisnot et aviyeh mechalela ba'esh tisaref, and understand each phrase on two levels. The shir almost reminds me of like a black and white cookie, being able to see everything with the complexity of black and white, and see that things aren't so simple. Just before we begin, to make sure that we're on the same page, 1b, leaves note through adultery, all agree this verse does not apply to a single woman. Right? When we're talking about a daughter of a Kohen who is desecrated through adultery, this is not one who has relations when she's a single woman. The sages disagree on whether the daughter of a verse is a fully married woman who committed adultery, or whether she had accepted Kedushin, but had not yet completed the marriage through Chuppah, in which case she has the status of a married woman regarding adultery. And we know that there, in those times, there was a year between these two stages. So she was engaged, not yet married, but really had the status in this particular area of marriage. This question is the discussion of what we're talking about, which is found really in the Gemara, is noted in the later sources, in sources 2, 3, and 4. The Tosefet Bracha notes, Uvad Ish Kohen, he says that we're talking about here, why does it say Uvad Ish Kohen, the daughter of a man who's a Kohen? Why not just say Uvad Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen? So he said, had it just said Uvad Kohen, it would be similar to like the Tarim, like the descriptions of Bat Nadiv, Bat Zion, the daughter of Zion, the daughter of a generous person, which is a description of ownership of this person. He says, if it would just say Bat Kohen, one would think that perhaps this woman is only a Bat Kohen when she acts like a Bat Kohen. Here, when she's acting in an inappropriate way, she's lost that status, similar to Uvat Nadiv, a person who's described as a generous person. If they stop being generous, they won't get this title. So it says, therefore, the Chumash adds, Uvad Ish Kohen. Ish is something which is noting that her father is a Kohen. Just like her father's Kahuna is immutable, and it goes from generation to generation. Likewise, she's always a Bat Kohen. No matter what she does, she's always referred to as a Bat Kohen, and she never loses that status. Right? So even if she's married to a non-Kohen, she's still referred to as a Bat Kohen. And therefore, if she commits adultery, according to this, she would be liable for this punishment. The other approach is that of the Dat Traga. Obviously, it's much more complex than we're making it out. I just want us to be aware of the nuances in this pasuk. The Dat Traga asks the question, he says, is a Bat Kohen intrinsically a Kohenet? Like we have the son of a Kohen is a Kohen. And the son of a Kohen is not allowed to come in contact with those who are dead. Right? And that is why we know that very often a woman who is pregnant, who's married to a Kohen, will not enter into a cemetery lest she's be carrying a male child, right? So the male child is the in the line is liable to all of these. What about the Bat Kohen? Does she have that same status, that she's a Bat Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, no matter what? And the question becomes, can you give her truma? So I understand she eats truma because, just like the wife, maybe she's a Yisraeli, and she marries a Kohen, she eats truma because she's in her husband's house, and she's allowed to eat truma. But would you be allowed to give this woman truma? That's a bigger question, right? And the answer is no, because she's not really a Kohen. She's just married to a Kohen. So would you be able to give this girl truma? So that's the question. So that Shraga seems to say, based on the Gemara and different Diyunim and Tosfos, no, her status of the Bat Kohen is only when she's in her father's house, but it's not a status, unlike the first opinion, it's not a status that goes forever. And as soon as Aval B'Sha'as Sheni Seit Yatz'ah, the asterisks are for Mirashut Aviha, once she gets married and she leaves her father's home, she loses the status called the Bat Kohen. It's not intrinsic. She herself is not a Kohen. Her greatness is that she's a daughter of a Kohen. Therefore, if she would be married, if she would marry somebody else, it doesn't matter. If she gets married, it doesn't matter if she marries a Kohen, Levi, Israel, it doesn't matter. She's no longer the status of a Bat Kohen. Who is this pasuk talking about? The daughter of a Kohen who commits adultery, not the wife of a Kohen. So since it's very specific to the daughter of a Kohen, it's only when she maintains that status of a daughter of a Kohen. That's only when she's still living in her father's house. So according to the Datraga, and this is Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, that only one who is engaged and not yet married is considered a Bat Kohen, because she's still living in her father's house, and therefore she would be liable for this punishment. Once she gets married and she commits adultery, she's liable for punishment, but not this punishment, because she's no longer considered a Bat Kohen. So that's the first idea, most technical of what we're dealing with today, and we see this implications even at Hayom Hazeh, that if a Bat Kohen gets married to, let's say, a person who's the Yisrael, and they have their oldest child is a boy, and there would be a Pidyon HaBen. So we know that today we would not do a Pidyon HaBen because she's a Bat Kohen. So according to this, you see that there is some status of being a Bat Kohen, albeit she has left her father's house and she's no longer under his domination or dominion, and it still maintains somewhat of a status called a Bat Kohen. Okay, that's idea number one for today. Uvadish Kohen, the argument whether, are we referring to that a daughter of a Kohen is always a Bat Kohen for her whole life, or only when she's living in her father's house. Once she gets married, doesn't matter to whom, she's lost that special status called a Bat Kohen, and then that would depend on what it means adultery, according to the first opinion, whoever she's married, whenever she's engaged through marriage, she's liable for this punishment, according to the second opinion, only when she's engaged and not when she's married. Let's take a look at the second phrase, and here we're going to enter more into relevancy for our lives. Ki techel lizno. What does techel mean? Something to commit adultery. So here there's a machloket between Rashi and the other mefarshim. There are many mefarshim in source 6, Seish Tamim notes. Rabimin are farshim pershu ki techel Lashon Hatchala, when she begins to do things that lead her on the slippery slope that will lead her to adultery. And the Ishtami notes in the asterisks in 6. The Nira we see from here, Shekatuv Kan Yisod Gadol, that we learn a very fundamental principle. Hatara Balo Marlano Ketsari Giotan Narali Dei Source Nur Hachamur Kokach. How did she land up with adultery, which is such a terrible sin? He says, "Hilo nafla yashar l'sno." No one wakes up one morning and says, "You know what? I think it's a good idea to commit adultery today." Ella hirak hitchila ksat. She just begins. Yarda mashahu. She goes down a drop in her level. Yatsa chutzah. She goes outside. In fact, it's fascinating. If you cross-reference, the Eish Tamid brings this pasuk by Dina. Vateitze Dina bat Leah. Dina just goes out. L'rop if no da'aret. Slippery slope. And he brings his pasuk. Vateichel. Of the Bat Kohen. Berega shematchilim, shepotchim petach layetzer. As soon as you open a little bit of a opening for the Yitzhahara, ein gvul lidarterut, there's no end to where you can fall, ubesof megimad kineitz not until you reach the nut. Ein derchem sait, there's no middle ground. If you begin to fall, you will generally fall till the end. Uvad kohen ki techel, shekem shirak hitchila, sofo shel davar shebal lusnot, vatzai tavyei mechalelam. You know, so often we think that in the realm of Kedusha and Tuma, that, you know, you could be in quasi-ground. And the answer is really not. If you begin to open into the areas of things that are anti-Kedusha, it's very hard to stop. The domino effect is very great. It reminds me of a conversation that I had with a young lady who was going out with a boy, and then she realized that he wasn't so good for her, and whatever the factors were, so they decided they weren't going to speak anymore. And then she said, you know what, we decided that we would just communicate on these, WhatsApp chats that are, you know, social media. Not directly one-on-one, but, you know, in more of a group setting. And she said, you know, before you know it, once we just started there, we're now back to talking. So again, it's not saying that they're necessarily going to enter into snoot, but the relationship is going to once again go back to where it started from. You can't just say, I'm going to open up a little bit. There's no such thing as a little bit. And that's a one yesod for us to understand, that when one is entering into this world, and we see it so clearly today in the world of technology and pornography, you open up just a little bit, you've opened up a can of worms, that's impossible to really stop. And that's such one of the big challenges that we're dealing with today. So that's one approach. Ki techel, be careful with just beginning. That's why we have so many fences to stop just from the beginning, so many filters, because once you've begun, it's very hard to then step back. The other approach of Ki techel, beginning of six, is Rashi. Lashon chilu, shemechalelet et aviha, kemshech lashon hakatuv et aviha mechalelet. Rashi says the two parts of the pasuk are really parallel. Ki techel lizno, when she begins to desecrate, and the end of the pasuk says her father she desecrates. So by committing adultery, what this is a desecration. I'd like to add on this level, again, the black and white cookie of what ki techel, on one hand it means to begin, on the other hand it means to commit a chilul, a desecration. Well, what does chilul mean? How do we understand desecration? Right, we talk about don't make a chilul Hashem, which is in this week's parasha. Right, don't desecrate God's name. A chilul Shabbat, someone's mechalul Shabbat, they desecrate Shabbat. What does that desecration mean? Like, how do we understand this? So, since it's a phrase that we use so often, I'd like to just, for a few moments, try to have a deeper understanding and a deeper appreciation of this phrase. Rabbi Yerucham in Das Torah points out in source number 8. He says, Malacha b'Shabbat, nikra b'shem mechalel Shabbat. One who does malacha on Shabbos, any type of work that the rabbis have forbidden, is mechalel Shabbos, is desecrate Shabbos. But also, tell malacha b'Shabbat, hinei b'zeh chilel etzem Shabbat. You're really desecrating the essence of Shabbos. V'ainyan hi. And the obvious understanding is, ki Shabbat rei kodeshu. Shabbos is holy, v'aykadesh oto. Right? We begin Shabbos off with Kiddush. Shabbos, by definition, is something of sanctification, something of elevation, something of separation. And indeed, our job is, mitzvah hayom hi lechabdo ulekacho. Our job is to honor Shabbos and to make it holy. And Chazal tells us, how do we do this? Shelo yamin hago shel Shabbat ki minhago shel chol. That the way that we act on Shabbos should not be the way we act during the week. As we know that our clothes on Shabbos are different, the way we speak on Shabbos is different, the way we walk is different on Shabbos, our whole demeanor is different on Shabbos because it reflects the Kedusha, the holiness of Shabbos. With this understanding, my friends, we understand that our behavior and our actions on Shabbos make a statement, Ki Shabbat Hayom, that today is Shabbos. It's mufresh, umuvdal mikol hayom. It is separated and distinct from all the days. V'zehu ikar kvodo v'kacho. This is really the essence of making it holy. That I say today is different. I look at my clothes and I say, wow, it's a Shabbos today. I feel differently. I'm eating different foods on Shabbos. How many of us, you know, eat cholent Wednesday night? I'm not talking about leftovers, see, right? We don't make cholent for Wednesday night. We don't make, you know, Yerushalmi kugel in the middle of the week. There's special food for Shabbos, special aroma for Shabbos. I speak differently on Shabbos. My whole aspect, I think about, you know, can I pick out this safer from these furry men, this blueberry from the strawberries? Our whole thought process is different. That's what makes it Shabbos. However, What is Chilul Shabbos? It means, double underline in 9, Mashpil hu emailas ha-Shabbos b'ashvot otov kechol ha-yamim. Chilul Shabbos is when you empty out Shabbos from all of its specialness and treat it like all the other days. And indeed, halal is outer space. A person has a halal in their house. It means empty space that a lot of people like to find a halal and then build into that empty space, right? Halal is emptiness. Chilul is to empty out the intrinsic kedusha of the day, of the time, of the experience. And then you're like everything else. That's the desecration. The hu atzmo shel chilul. So Chilul Shabbos doesn't have to be that you know, Chilul Shabbos, we understand, if a person turns on, drives a car on Shabbos, we say, oh, Machal Shabbos. They've desecrated Shabbos. In what way have they desecrated Shabbos? They've equated Shabbos with the rest of the week. Obviously, I'm not talking about an emergency or something like that, but you understand. They've equated it to the rest of the week. They've taken away from the specialness of the day. That's why Chilul and Kedusha are really two sides of the same coin. They are opposing one with another. And Mitzvot Shel Kedusha Hainu Hafrash of Avdala. Kedusha is separateness and being set aside. Umukari Nasuto Mikol La'ela V'Leila. And it's understood that it's on a higher and different level. V'chilu Hibi B'chol L'gamre. And chilu is Hashpalat Ha'inyanim, lowering something down. Ben B'li Kol Afresh V'Avdel Ben Davar L'Davar, without making any distinction. Now we appreciate what Chilul Hashem is. A Kiddush Hashem, it's the whole reason we're alive in this world, is to be able to, on every single thing we do and every single thing we say and how we behave, we're making a statement that I am a servant of Hashem and I'm cognizant that everything that I say and do is going to elevate everything, myself and everything around me in this world. I am a walking Kiddush Hashem. That's my goal. When I don't act in an appropriate way, I have taken away that intrinsic kedusha that's within me, the intrinsic holiness that I'm supposed to live up to, and I've emptied myself from that, and that has created that empty space, that distinction. That's what the Chilul Hashem is. So this girl, we can appreciate, ki techel lifno. This young lady is coming from the greatest of all stock. She's coming from Kahuna, the holiest of all stock. These were the people that didn't sin by the Chet HaEgel. These are the people who never were slaves in Egypt. These were the people who ran the Beis Medrash, you know, the ones who sat and learned. Shevet Levi, Kahuna, these are the best. These are the holiest. For her to act in this way, ki techel lizno, what she has done is emptied herself out of all that intrinsic holiness that she has by birth and that she has by education, and she's acting in a way which has removed herself from this entire Kedusha. And albeit we perhaps may not be a Bat Kohen, but as we will soon see, this is as relevant to us as well, of being careful not to create this aspect of chilul, this aspect of desecration. So we've seen so far the first phrase, Vadish Kohen, she herself is intrinsically a Bat Kohen, what would it be? No, it's only when she is in her father's house. Ki techel lizno, when she has begun, beginning creates a slippery slope. Or B, you may not get to the bottom, but you're never going to get back up to that top again. It's a very, very slippery slope. Ki techel lizno, she creates a chilul, and for us to have that understanding, whether it's by Shabbos, Kiddush Hashem, in whatever area, we're emptying out what is there, that specialness. And we need to live Shabbos on a level of specialness, on a level of distinction. And when we're Mechal Shabbos, we've lost that distinction. We've lost that specialness. And Zevu Matzeh, on Shabbos, it's not just enough not to be Mechal Shabbos. You have to be a Kavi Shabbos. Make Shabbos special. Make sure you speak differently. Make sure you walk differently. Make sure that you experience Shabbos V'Kidashto, that it's a holy experience, that you do feel that your whole essence, Shabbos Island, you're in a different zone completely. As well as understanding that everything we do and say, we walk into a store, how we interact with people, has to be our mindset. I'm kadosh. Kadoshim tios, we spoke about last week, I'm intrinsically holy. I need to live and develop and access that intrinsic holiness within me. The next two phrases are the two that I really want to spend the most time on. that I think are really very relevant. The next phrase, at Avia Himechalela, she desecrates her father. So if we take a peek in source 24, Rav Munk brings down Rashi and explains that she has shamed his honor, for they will say about him, accursed is the one who fathered her, accursed is the one who raised her. This comes to me, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Ashi concludes that this is appropriate to refer to as a sinner, as a son of a sinner, even though his father is righteous. The father shares in the responsibility for his child's evil conduct. Rabbi Meir interprets the words Mechalel desecrates in the sense of invalidating his status, so he loses the rights and honor associated with his rank. And this interpretation is confirmed by some opinions maintained in the Shulchan Aruch. However, the Shulchan Aruch concludes that it's now longer the practice to disqualify Cohen for reasons of his children's waywardness. The question I'd like to really focus in on the one aspect of Et Avia Mechalela is a very, very sensitive topic, obviously. I'd just like to raise some points. It's a topic that needs to be addressed, obviously, much more than the few minutes that we're going to give it here today, but just to give us food for thought, so to speak. And that is, according to this, at Avia Mechalela, that her father loses his status, so then what we're really doing is holding her father responsible. Is a parent really responsible if their child doesn't follow in the way, does things that does not follow in the way that the parents envisioned? So here the Sabbath of Kelm in Source 12 notes. Kohanim have a very, very high level of chinuch because they had to eat everything b'tahara, impurity. So they were walking around making sure they were holy, they were pure at all times. And therefore, the chinuch that they had was a chinuch that was with an education of the highest level. V'imkei, next paragraph, mi shenit gadla b'veitam, one who's growing up and being raised in such a home, milumete b'chinuch na'ala, she is being exposed to the highest level, the best, A-plus level of chinuch. V'im hi misana, and if she will nevertheless commit adultery, hechmira katuv shtei madregot yoter b'mita, mechenek atzayif atzreifa. Well, generally, somebody who commits adultery, his punishment is mechenek and strangulation. She goes up two ranks to strefa because I have expected more from her. Perush motzia las al chinuch beit avia lachin hechmira katuv od madrigat l'sreifa. So according to this, albeit the father is shamed, but the shame is really coming from the daughter. The daughter is the one who's taken this great chinuch, and she has decided to reject this chinuch. So then the question becomes, well, was it the father's responsibility to be mechanech her better, or he was mechanech her to the best of his ability, and she nevertheless did this, and therefore the onus is on her, not really on the father. So here we come to a very interesting insight in L'titchel Yom brings in Source 15. It's a very famous Gemara. The Gemara is about Miriam Bat Bilga, Shemira Data, that she rejected Judaism completely. She married a non-Jew, and when the non-Jews came into the Beit HaMikdash, she took off her sandal and banged on the Mizbeach and said, you know, locus, locus, ad matay atam mechalem amonam shel Yisrael v'yata omed lahem beit zaratam. U'kishishamu chachamim badavar, kavu atabata v'sitmu chalona. How much longer are you going to be eating up the people's money? How much longer are you going to just be, you know, consuming these sacrifices, right? People pay a lot of money for these animals, and you don't even help them out. And when the rabbis heard this, they put a ban on this families from being participating in the service of the kuna, and it cost them thousands, a lot of money, because they lost this potential income of serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So the question becomes, well, why was the family punished? She's the one who made this statement. So the answer that Rashi tells us is whatever a child hears, they hear from their father or their mother, she didn't make this up, you know, Mizbeach, that you're, you know, consuming all of this, and we're not getting anything in return, and what a waste of money. Obviously, this is something that she repeated, and not something that she came up with on her own. On this, Rav Shraga Feldman Shlitos, Mashgiach Yeshiva Nachlas David, asks a very interesting question. Hold on a second. Why are we holding the father responsible for this statement that she said about the Mizbeach? Should we not hold him responsible for the fact that she married a non-Jew? Isn't that far worse? And here he says a very fascinating insight. Ella afal pishef sharli told chichinuch mula yoter yashamra legamrei miderech basha. You're right. Perhaps she could have had a better chinuch, a better education that would have saved her from going off. Becholzo, nevertheless, ein manishim avot. We don't punish fathers al shaloh chinchu b'nehem b'yeter k'beda for not going above and beyond, for not even being more stringent. Hatana haital zilzul b'mizbeach. What we are holding responsible for is that the chinuch that they did give, did they have a positive impression of Yiddishkeit or not? This is something that they gained from the house itself. This is something so fundamental that parents give over to the children. And this is something. Her going off the derech was something that maybe he could have done something about, maybe not. She had free choice. But I'll tell you one thing that he does have control about, or more control about, or we're holding him responsible for, is attitude. Right? Whether you accept this or not, that was her free choice. But the attitude towards Yiddishkeit, the attitude towards Torah mitzvot, the love of Torah mitzvot, the arevus of Torah mitzvot, that we do hold a parent responsible to the best of their ability to give this over. Let's try to examine this topic again, which is a very sensitive topic, a little bit more deeply. Sichos Moser, 16 notes. We know that Shem and Yafet took the blanket, the simla, and they went backwards to cover their naked father. And from here, Chazal say that Shem was zocha that his children would have the mitzvah of tzitzit on their clothes. Then later we find that Avravinu said, Imi chuvetzok now, I don't want to take anything from Melech Sodom, and because of this, he gets the mitzvah of tzitzit. Well, for whom's credit do we get the mitzvah of tzitzit? Do we get it from Shem or from Avraham? So the answer Sichos Moser gives is that Shem had the garim, he had the seed, and Avram Ravina, of all Shem's descendants, was the one who drew it out, and he was the one who was able to get this reward. And he notes in many instances where you see this, that there is some type of garim, some type of positive and or negative seed potential that is found within a person. And then in next generation or generations later, that seed can be developed. And again, there's a free choice where everyone has that choice to take that potential, that inherent quality, and develop it for the good or develop it for the bad. And this is why we have, by the Barish Kohei, because she obviously is drawing out some potential that comes from her forefathers, then the forefathers, parent, the grandparent, whoever it is in some level responsible, because it's not only she that's acting out. She's acting out based on something that somebody else had. Now, again, it goes in the positive as well as the negative. Right? By Yaakov Avinu, he says, I don't want my name found by the Korach or by Zimri. Right? I want only the positive parts of me to be connected with my descendants, not the negative. So here we see clearly that every parent has some type of hashpah. And when we say parent, it could be generations before. Reuven going out and being careful not to steal. His descendants want to go ever layarte. They don't want to steal. They take that great quality of Reuven and they develop it. And all of our forefathers, our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, however many generations back, all of amazing qualities. And we know that this is part of parcel of who we are. We have this genetic DNA, this spiritual DNA. And there's some wonderful qualities that we pick up and that we develop and that we get the credit for as well as they get the credit for instilling this in us. And it works on the flip side as well. So according to this, is the parent held responsible? The answer is the child is the one who has the responsibility to choose albeit understand that the parent, that the child is taking something that is genetically found, and hence it would, we understand why the father is the one who's going to have to suffer some consequences, because obviously it is coming down somewhere along that Gauna line that has come to the fore with this girl. And therefore, the chilul, the taking away his rights and his status, is really her opportunity to bring a inherent pagam, something that was no good in the family. She's only bringing it out, and this is something that the family deserved, to have this type of humiliation for something a long time ago, but that was just hidden until now and only brought out by her. So again, we're working in this very, very delicate balance that parents do have some, you know, part in this. But really, the onus of responsibility is on the child who chooses this particular path. It's interesting that the Tiv HaGadol, Rav Gamliel Rabinowitz Shlita, points out that if you have, in 22, if you have a child who chinuch was not invested in them, and they just grew up like, you know, a wildflower, and they, tremendous nachas, amazing. Can the parent take credit for this? The answer is no. The parent is going to be held responsible. Why didn't they do more in the chinuch of this child? So again, just for a child to develop on their own, there is some aspect of the parent has to invest to the best of their ability and can't just say, you know what, it's all under responsibility on you. There is this give and take between parent and child. However, he says in 23, on the flip side, if a parent has done all that they can do in order to raise the child in the best way possible, they feel they've given, no one can really say they've done the best, but whatever you can say, you've davened for the child, you've invested in the child. We know Shalom Bayis is one of the most crucial components for children to be raised in a happy, well-adjusted, balanced, respectful home. If you say that you've done the best you can to build this environment for your child and give them the best education possible, and they then reject it, so then at that point you have to step back and say, I've done what I can do, and I can't sit and blame myself, why couldn't I have done more? And he brings as a proof of this, in the Haggadah we say, V'ekach et avichem v'etem l'Yitzchak et Yaakov et Esav. To some degree, there's something much larger at play here, which we don't understand. Avraham Avinu had Yitzchak Avinu had a Yaakov and an Esav, and the language of the Haggadah is ve'etein, and I gave. Shashem natan lo zot. Hashem gave him this. V'dvarim Elohim no tamim dream. And we don't understand it. It's beyond our understanding. Why Hashem would give a person, a child, who's going to choose, and again, that free will, predetermination, we all know about that debate, who's going to choose to go off. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for some reason, wanted this particular neshama, who again has free choice, no path is predetermined, even in Esav, to go off and to be whoever they are, understand that the parent is able to say, I have done whatever I can do, and I can't sit back and blame myself and berate myself. Ve'ete, there's a larger siyata d'shmaya here. And keep in mind, he says, there's a common misconception, this is a sefer with cords of love, based on Ratzio Solomon Shlita's writings on children who go off the derech. He says, there's a common misconception that success in child rearing is entirely up to the parents. If the children turn out right, it's because the parents succeeded. If they stray, it's because the parents have failed. If we try to apply this notion to any other endeavor in life, we realize instinctively how wrong it is. A person who believes that he is responsible for success in business, suggesting my strength and the might of my hand has earned me all this wealth, is only wrong, but incredibly haughty. And the same thing with parent, with child raising. None of us can walk around strutting like a peacock. It's all in the hands. We do our part, but like everything else, there's a larger picture out there. There's bechira, there's free choice. There's a larger hashkacha, a larger plan that a Kaddish Baruch Hu has. And he says, particularly our children face challenges that were unfathomable in previous generations. Society around us has embraced immorality. What should be considered shockingly immodest behavior and images are now considered normal fear in all media and entertainment. When I was growing up, what is today PG-13, or maybe even G, would be rated R, maybe rated X. No one even thinks twice today. Technology has changed the world in which we live, allowing free access to the most depraved material with a tap of a finger. It has become nearly impossible to raise children without exposure to the horrendous decadence which have taken hold of society around us. To provide proper chinuch in our current social climate requires tremendous yata d'shmaya. Just as someone who succeeds in business does so only because Hashem grants him success, so too when parents succeed in raising good children, it's because Hashem has granted them that success. But if we recognize that we can't take credit for our success in mechanech children during challenging times, we must also recognize that the converse is also true in today's chinuch climate. Parents are not necessarily to blame when a child strays. As the Imamra says, yes, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. That's in normal winds. We're dealing with hurricane winds right now. Clearly, success in chinuch is often dependent on many external factors, and even parents do everything perfectly may have been chosen for the nisayon of having to watch a child stray from the path of Torah. Although we cannot explain Hashem's ways in 30 with absolute certitude, we can suggest several reasons why Kadosh Baruch Hu may give this nisayon to a specific family. One is, Hashem loves the tefillos of tzaddikim, and this is absolutely a way to bring parents much closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Tremendous amount of tefillah goes into this child. And we know very often that children who have been davened for with so much tears were really watering them to grow in ways that we can't even fathom. And it's usually those kids who give us the most difficulty that we get the most nachas from in the end. And that's something that we've seen. Two, emulating his ways. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to go on Hashem's ways, which Chazal determined to mean that we should emulate his midos. Just as he is merciful, so too we should be merciful. 32. One of Hashem's midos is savlanus. He is extremely patient and tolerant with us, granting us all that we need, even though we don't always conduct ourselves in accordance with his Torah. On the morning that Klai Yisrael rose early to worship the Egel of Zahav, they found the manna waiting for them in the desert. Despite the fact they're about to engage in a sin, the consequences of which we're still suffering from until today, Hashem still supplied them with the food they needed to sustain them throughout the day. And the manna, going back to 31, awaited them the next morning as well, after they had sinned. In the words of the Navi, even though they made themselves a golden calf and said, "This is your God that brought you up from Egypt," you did not withhold your manna from their mouths and you gave them water for their thirst. Hashem wants us to develop this very same mika, the ability to patiently provide for others even when their behavior disappoints us. He watches to see if we are tolerant and patient with children who stray as he is with us when we stray from him. When parents exhibit self-control, patience, and tolerance despite their child's action and ungratefulness, and they invest their Herculean efforts necessary to rebuild the relationship with them, it transforms them as well. Many parents who have dealt with this nisayon can attest that they have reached far greater levels of perfection, which is the most fundamental reason we were placed into this world. And again, to learn more about this, I highly recommend the Sefer with Cords of Love. For both sides, we don't know the larger picture. We do know that this girl, she has created a situation of snot. She has devoided herself and taken away from herself this idea of Kedusha. Etavia Mechalala, it's definitely a chilo. It's taking away the Kedusha of herself, and it impacts the Kedusha of the entire family as well, no doubt about it. How much is a parent responsible? So again, there is a genetic component where every parent and every, you know, all going all the way back, in, you know, have certain character traits that this person has the bechira, the first free choice to bring to the fore for the positive and or for the negative, which could bring l'shem l'tiferet, to bring the family great honor or great shame. And this is something that she's chosen. Having said this, a parent who has put in all of their effort that they can, there are many, many nisyonos, there are many challenges, there is no guarantee in life. For a parent to take the credit and or blame 100% on them is missing the point. We have to understand that there are many different components if, here. Our job, and that's why Hayom, the Shulchan Aruch says, the father is not disqualified from being a Kohen, right? He can do it, right? Why? Because today there's so many aspects that come into this equation. People don't live in a cloistered, you know, you have the world at your fingertips, in your home. There's so much, only so much you can do. If a parent is responsible, they have put filters on their computers. They've decided when and how to teach their children to have smartphones. And they've, you know, chosen the right schools and the right friends and the right camps, and they've done all that they can do, and the child still makes this decision. So then the parent is facing a nisayon, that is a tailor-made nisayon for tefillah to have patience, to develop as the midos of Hashem, and the parents and the family needs to know that this is a nisayon that they need to grow from. This is a nisayon that needs to bring them closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, and you hear stories of this, of a father who will put negavasser by his child's bed, even though every morning he doesn't use it. Father, every morning will put negavasser by the bed. And ultimately, the child said it was the negavasser that brought him back, because he saw his father loved him. He saw his father never gave up on him. He saw his father put it by his bed for months, even though he didn't touch it, because he saw that his father was holding by him and holding him. And these are the things, that the small things that we need to do to be able to tell our children, we believe in you, we hold by you, and we're bringing you in. And this is something that we need to understand. I'll just add, as a postscript, we know that unfortunately many, many of the children that go off the derech, and what are the causes and the reasons are beyond us, but we know that abuse is high up there on the list, and then you can't even blame the child either. That the fact that the child is abused, there's a big correlation with going off to derech, losing trust, relationships, etc., etc. So then we get much more complex. It's not the parent's fault. It's not the child's fault. It's an outer, you know, condition, a nisayon, a challenge. And then all of us have to work together to be able to help this child overcome this very, very painful challenge, that they can be able to learn how to trust again, have relationships again, and ultimately build the relationship with their parents and back with the Kaddish Baruch Hu in the most wholesome way possible. So when we say, you know, whose responsibility, the answer is all of the above, none of the above. Every situation is different. Our responsibility is tefillah, sablonos, following the Kaddish Baruch Hu's ways. If we take a look at that same phrase, et gavia machalala, she desecrates her father, on a different level, black and white cookie, we have a whole different explanation, and that is based on Darchei Mussar in 33 and 34, and then the Or Daniel developing this in 35 through 37, is that Edavia Mechalala is really a mashal for you and me. When we, ki techel lizno, when we go off the path, when we commit adultery in terms of what is our focus in our lives, and the Darchei Mussar gives this example. He says, if a person's in the army, so every, you know, little button that isn't buttoned, or the shoelaces that aren't tied, so there's a responsibility. But there's even a bigger responsibility if you leave the army altogether. That's a much more major thing. When we leave the army, when we don't follow the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then we have a big taina on us. And we are the Badish Kohen. As we mentioned before, we're the Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. We're the holy nation of God. We are the ones who are living a life of Kedusha. When we veer from that path, when we choose not to be loyal, when we have emptied ourselves of that Kedusha, et Aviyahi Mechalala, we are the ones desecrating our Father, Avinu Shema Shemaim, our Father in Heaven. And therefore this pasuk comes to teach each and every one of us such a fundamental lesson. Don't only point a finger at her and say, how could she have done that? Point a finger at ourselves. We have a higher standard of conduct, a higher standard of morality. We have a Torah to lead us in the proper way. And now you're going to go and do things which are going to be so clearly against this code of conduct. You have created et avia mechalala. You've created this Chilul Hashem. And the example that the Or Daniel gives is very simple examples. A person who's from, who cuts in line, right? You clearly see a from woman, a man with a kippah, tzitzit, and they cut in line. What do people say? All Jews aren't honest. They cut in line. They're rude, right? You know, whatever it is in the business world, you know, Jews are dishonest. Jews don't, you know, you're not just an individual. You're a card-carrying member, and everyone sees that. So the responsibility, just like this Bat Kohen, has a higher level responsibility because she comes from better stock, so to speak, in the educational sphere, and she's around so much holiness. We, too, come from better stock and this environment. the demands on us to make sure that every button is buttoned and every shoelace is tied to perfection is very, very important. And we have to live up to this so that we don't dishonor the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Finally, the last phrase, Ba'esh Tisaref, she will burn by fire. So I like to look at this phrase also on two levels. Again, not according to Pshat. The Yakut Shimoni asked the following question. What does this pasuk have to do with the very next pasuk, the Kohen HaGadol Mechav, and the Kohen Gadol from his brothers, the high priest? So the Yakut Shimoni says, V'chi ma'inyan zeluseh, ela afu nisraf. What's the connection? He's also burned. He has nothing to do with this. The answer is, Kavanata Midrash Kishabat Kohen Yisrafa, when she is killed, Omrimla, we say to her, Shisrefa Zuena Rak Srefa Shala, it's not only her being burned, Ela Kalubaza Srefata Kohen Gadol Sheachol Hayala Tzeit Mimena. You know who's being burned at the same time? The potential of the high priest that could have come from her. Ilu Aita Nohege Karaoi, had she behaved appropriately, notes the Omoshe. Vaide Mesa. She is not only responsible for her actions, she's responsible for the potential that could have come from her as well. The very, very powerful insight that Rav Yaakov Hillel notes, based on Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai on his deathbed, who says, I don't know when I get up to heaven what path I'll be brought to, what I've done in my life. So he notes here in 41, at every step through our lives, we face another turning point, another parting of ways. Because of manipulations of the Yetzer Hara, the distinction between the two choices are blurred almost beyond recognition. He presents a difference between the right decision and the wrong one, just as a minute, truly insignificant discrepancy. One option might possibly be infinitesimally better, he tells us, but the other option is not all that bad either. So it really does not matter much either way. But this is not the voice of truth. It's the voice of the Yetzer Hara, loud and clear. And listen to this model, my friend, if we can walk away with this imagery. It's a little bit scary. Okay, it's a lot scary. It's an important imagery. Picture two parallel lines. They run together side by side from start to finish, ultimately arriving at the same destination. Now, introduce a deviation of just 1 millimeter. If you don't know what a millimeter is, it's very small. Though, and they begin to go their separate ways, until one finishes up at the North Pole and the other at the South Pole. What begins as a difference of just one tiny millimeter becomes two divergent paths growing even more distant. This is why Yochanan ben Zakkai said, I do not know. He said, he, like any other human being, had been faced with a lifetime of tests. Each one meant a decision. At the crucial moment, there had been only a hair's breadth between the two paths. It was only now, at the end of his life on earth, that he would discover where his decisions had led him. We must make such decisions our own lives as well. And the Yetzer Hara always seems to it that he's actively involved in the process. He knows halacha, mussar, and even some kabbalah, and is eager for us to have his input. He explains why suggestions are entirely acceptable and definitely worth heeding, especially since doing things his way frequently earns a comfortable payoff. He is most convincing, and very often we listen, and as a result, we may one day discover we follow the wrong path altogether, God forbid. Each and every decision we make, and this is really the theme of today's shiur, that a person doesn't come out of nowhere. A person comes out of the small decisions that they make. You know, a person may say, well, what difference does it make if I do A or B? B wasn't such a good choice, but does it make a difference? And the answer is yes, it makes a difference for that A or B, but it makes a much bigger difference, because B leads you on a certain path. And then your decisions now, C and D, are going to be different had you taken A, which may have been Q and R. And then those are going to lead you to different decisions, and those are going to lead you to different decisions. And we've gone from the North Pole to the South Pole. Wow. Everything we do takes mindfulness, takes thought, takes the first beginning of the Sosa Shar, takes the Hebrews, takes really being able to judge. Let's take this a little bit further, a little bit deeper. They say the time of Sfiras HaOmer is the time of Din, the time of judgment. So hence we're talking a lot of these shiurim about this level of responsibility. The Gemara's explanation of the term Din v'cheshbon, literally judgment and accounting, offers an additional insight into this exacting nature of divine judgment. The Gonad disciples once walked past a noisy roadside tavern, where a boisterous crowd was engaged in drinking and dancing. The door swung open, and they were distressed to see a drunken Jew dancing happily with a group of non-Jews. As they walked away, the Gaon told the students, "That Jew will have to give a din v'cheshbon as to why he was not engaged in the study of Kabbalah right now." The students did not understand. Source 47, Kabbalah, they asked. "What does a lowlife like that have to do with the hidden secrets of the Torah? Certainly have to give a din v'cheshbon. Be it, but it will be for gross transgressions like drinking non-Jewish wine, dancing with non-Jews, skipping prayers, and not putting a tefillin. Who's even thinking about Kabbalah?" The Gaon explained that this is the meaning of the term din v'cheshbon, judgment and accounting. We'll have to give our every action. First, there's a simple din. Was the action right or was it wrong? If it was wrong, Hashem then makes a cheshbon, an accounting of what we could have been doing instead at that time we committed the sin. In this instance, rather than sinning in a bar, the drunkard could have been sleeping quietly in his own bed at home, much more beneficial activity. Or he could have been in the synagogue for prayers, which would have been even better. In fact, he could have been participating in Daf Yomi class or studying Talmudic topic in depth. Perhaps he could have been teaching Torah class himself. Had he really used his time properly by now, he could have reached an extremely advanced level of Torah study and been learning day and night. He could have even been learning Kabbalah. Instead, he was drinking in a bar. Din is a judgment for the deed itself. Cheshbon is an accounting of the wasted potential involved. Each of us in our ways could have reached a level of our forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, on the divine scale. Wasted opportunity weighs very heavily. Now, I'm going to just add something here so we're all on the same page. We're not talking here about downtime and leisure time that we need in order to be able to survive, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's whatever recreational activity that's appropriate that we're doing in order to be able to have energy, to be able to do what we need to do in this world. We're talking, and again, if we overdo this, then that's also a problem. I remember once a lady asked me, she said, she's very distressed, an elderly lady, she says, "I do Sudoku during the day." I said, "Great, what's the problem?" She says, "Isn't Sudoku a waste of time?" I said, "Absolutely not. Sudoku's great. Gets your brain moving, breaks you from Alzheimer's, on and on." I said to her, "You know, if you'd be doing Sudoku all day, that'd be a little bit puzzling. But doing it, you know, forever, a half hour a day, that's amazing." So again, whatever we do, knitting, Sudoku, whatever it is that we need, reading a book, a downtime, that's what we need. That's not what we're going to be held responsible for. If I spend, you know, my whole day doing that and I'm not productive, so that's a whole different story. But the question is, when a person sins, well, what could they have done at that moment instead? How could they have used that energy instead? It's a very, very powerful idea. This is the idea of Ba'esh Tisareth. She's getting punished not only for herself, but for the consequences of her actions that have impacted her potentially being somebody who could have been the mother of the Kohen Gadol. And that is our call. And he brings here in 45, we say from Sul Shisharim Katav, Zab Lashono, Kiraka Shleimus or Davar Ha'ui, Sheikhmad Mehem Vlod Zata. We have to look for perfection. Vishain Ra Gadol Mechisaron HaShleimot. There's nothing worse than lacking in Shleimus. Chisaron B'masha Chaser Lo, Ela Ki Chisaron Hu B'chol Kulo, Yodim Heim Eifel Shein Ra Gadol Mimeno Mechisaron HaShleimot. In life, we have to try to aim to be as perfect as possible in what we do, as whole as possible. And that includes in our time as well, to be able to utilize our time to develop it to the fullest. And that's somebody who is going to be able to be very keenly aware of being able to schedule their day, to be able to focus on their day, and be able to have a list of what they want to accomplish, and every person has different personality traits, how to get that done, and to be able to make sure that my day has been utilized to the fullest. Not that I look back at the end of the day and say, "Gee, what have I done today? What a waste of time, what a waste of energy, what a waste of the potential shleimus." And there's going to be a din v'cheshbon of what you could have been doing in this all this wasted time. Our final idea for today. Let's summarize and we'll end with our final idea. Uvarish Kohen ki techel is note. Is she intrinsically a Bat Kohen or not? Perhaps she is, and if she is, even if she marries a Yisrael, she gets married, liable for adultery. Uvadish Kohen, no, only when she's in her father's house, and that's why it's only when she's engaged. And she's still living in her father's house, not if she's already married. Clearly we're not talking about a single person. Good. Ki techel is not. It's either the slippery slope, and we have to understand that. We all know this in diets. You know, I'll just eat a little bit. And then after I eat a little bit, I say, well, if I've already eaten this, so what difference does it make? Let me just have the whole meal. Right? This is a slippery slope, and where we have to put in our energy is at the beginning. Build those fences. Lock those refrigerators with 15 locks so that you don't even come to have the temptation. Ki techel chilul. What a beautiful concept to empty out outer space. To be able to take that space of holiness and just suck all the holiness out of it, whether it's on Shabbos, whether it's Kiddush Hashem, whether it's the chill of our own selves, of our own intrinsic Kedusha. She took that high level of education, that high status that she was from, and she emptied it of its Kedusha. Et avieh mechalelet, she desecrates her father's name. Yes, there is repercussions for what she's done. The father has a responsibility to teach a child to be the best they can be. Ah, the father has done that. So again, there's that genetic DNA component that is coming out, and that's where he's seeing the effects and the repercussions for himself. And or, we understand that there are so many different factors that are outside the parents' control. As long as they've done what they needed to do, they have to understand that perhaps this is just part of one of their nisyonos in life, to David, and to be able to embrace the midos of Hashem. And Rabbi Sishahu goes through all 13 midos of the Tomer Dvora and connects it to how parents should be able to utilize them. It's fascinating, safer with cords of love, in dealing with this child. Finally, and then at the Via Michalala, it's really a muscle. We are desecrating Kodesh Baruch Hu. And if we act in an inappropriate way, that we deviate from the right path. But HT Saraf, she'll be burned by fire. Not only is she being burned, the Kohen Gadol that could have come from her is being burned. That we have to understand that decisions that we make have implications for the next step, and then the next step. And we have to realize that we can't say, well, this step is no big deal. This step is leading me one step closer to either the North Pole or the South Pole, and we have to understand that. The final idea is a beautiful idea of the Kedusha Slavi, where he says 48 in Hebrew, 49 in English. Bat Kohen is in our neshama. This pasuk can be understood as a remes, as a hint. Our neshama ki techel is note when it does the begam lamala, when it acts in an inappropriate way. And it affects the higher spheres. It affects the kedusha of this world. What do we do to counter out these effects? Two aspects. By ishti saref. One, be able to burn out the negativity. Take those negative parts of us and burn it out. Or, Ayidei Hislavu Shimislahe Vacharkach Lavodus Abore Baruch Hu Mishvilachet Shechata Tisarev Kola Klipos. When a person is able to take passion for their service of Hashem, they have the ability to take that Chilul Hashem and be able to create a Kiddush Hashem in its place. When a person sees that they have created this lightness, this emptiness around them, that they have, you know, made light of things that are holy. They've made light of people that are holy. They've done things in an inappropriate way. How can they do tshuva? Ba'eshti saraif. Go out and now burn with a passion and fire. When you have that passion and fire to connect with Hashem, when you're creating a Kiddush Hashem with that enthusiasm, that is the way to counteract the negative effect that you've created. And within that passion and flame, you can create a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. And you've now filled up that empty space with a tremendous amount of love. As we stand, Erev Lag BaOmer usually falls out in the week of Emor. Let us keep in mind that the whole idea of Lag BaOmer are the fires, and the fires are the fires of passion. And it reminds us that if you want to know the best way to connect with Hashem, one of the greatest ways is be on fire. Because when you're on fire and when you're passionate, and this is really what your love is about, you create a Kiddush Hashem all around you, as well it has a tremendous effect on your family, where they see what your values are, they see that you live those values, they see you're honest with those values, and with that fire, you're able to take away a lot of the coldness that's found in this world.